could not thrive. That was the whole reason for getting rid of the tenements that go with it.
Maureen Coates, environmental lawyer with Planet A Strategies. Hi, I'm Michael G. Haskins, host of Living for the City on WBAI 99.5 FM, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Every week, myself and senior producer Jillian Jonas take an in-depth look at the city of New York as it is developing right before our very eyes. We bring on grassroots organizations fighting to have their voices heard in how the community in which they live will grow and prosper into the future. So tune in to Living for the City Wednesdays at 11 a.m. over listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. And we're going to have some blues in a bit. Blues man, two-time Grammy Award-winning blues man Bobby Rush will be joining me on Living for the City. So tune in at 11 o'clock. Please stay tuned for Arab Voices. That's coming up next over WBAI.
And welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002, Houston's community station 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different states in the U.S. Today on Arab Voices, we will talk about an art symposium and exhibition called In the Sun, held in Houston, Texas by CASP, Collective Artists in Solidarity with Palestine, and PYM, Palestinian Youth Movement. The event was organized after the Holocaust Museum Houston canceled Latinx artists' participation from a panel that was scheduled at the Holocaust Museum. We will hear from one of the artists, Angel Lartigue, that wanted to talk about Palestine at the Holocaust Museum and what happened because of that. I will also air portions of the discussion that took place at the In the Sun Art Symposium held on October 9, 2021. And to give a brief background, the Holocaust Museum Houston opened an exhibition in April 2021 called Withstand Latinx Art in Times of Conflict. According to the museum's website, the exhibition was intended to explore themes of social justice and human rights through 100 artworks by Houston Latinx artists. The multimedia exhibition will be a platform that examines issues that impact the community, fosters dialogue on difficult questions, and ultimately empowers social change through art. The art featured in the exhibition includes several themes of focus, including border relations, gender roles, domestic violence, the immigrant experience, and social and political turmoil. That is according to the Holocaust Museum Houston website. So that exhibition opened in April 2021, and as you know, in May 2021, Israel launched an 11-day attack on the besieged Gaza Strip in occupied Palestine, in which Israel murdered 260 Palestinians, including 66 children, and wounded more than 2,000. The Israeli airstrikes on Gaza targeted residential buildings and high-rise. More than 2,400 housing units were made uninhabitable, and over 50,000 units were damaged, and over 2,000 industrial, trade, and service facilities were destroyed or partially damaged. Governmental buildings, international humanitarian organizations, medical facilities, and local and international media offices were bombed by Israel during that attack. Of course, the May 2021 Israeli attack on Gaza was not the first and most likely would not be the last. Based on apartheid Israel's bloody history of war crimes and ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Israel's attack on the Gaza Strip generated huge outrage worldwide, including right here in the United States. So the Holocaust Museum Houston that opened the exhibition Withstand Latinx Art in Times of Conflict in April 2021 posted a statement on its social media that said in part, quote, Holocaust Museum Houston unequivocally condemns the rise and anti-Semitism now plaguing cities across America and the world. According to the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, there has been an uptick in anti-Semitic attacks since conflict erupted in the Middle East. Unquote. One of the Latinx artists, Angel Lartigue, that was participating in the Withstand Latinx Art Times of Conflict exhibition and was also scheduled to speak at a panel discussion at the Holocaust Museum Houston, found that message odd and sent an email to the museum that said, quote, I am writing due to a statement released by the Holocaust Museum Houston on their Instagram account that greatly lacked acknowledgement and solidarity with Palestine, or as it was described, quote, conflict erupt in the Middle East, unquote. As an institution that promotes a visage of humanitarianism, I am very disappointed at the lack of direction and misdirection the post aimed to express. For this reason, I am asking for Holocaust Museum Houston to release another statement indicating they are an ally to Palestine and ending apartheid. My work included in the exhibition, Withstand Latinx Art in Times of Conflict, is a series of forensic burial maps of cadavers done through my training in forensic anthropology. These maps are connected to my work at the U.S.-Mexico border, a highly militarized site and cause of many migrant deaths. I describe it as a silent genocide. This same military regime is causing the displacement and deaths of many Palestinians due to the colonial state of Israel. I do not want my work to coincide with Holocaust Museum Houston's narrative of what is considered genocide in relation to the Holocaust without the support for Palestinian liberation. So I am asking to remove my three pieces from the exhibition out of display with this email printed in their place as an artist in solidarity with Palestine. I look forward by expanding solidarity in the coinciding exhibition panel discussion titled The Queer Experience by asking these questions. How can the Holocaust Museum of Houston stand against apartheid and ally to Palestine? What is the role of U.S.-based Holocaust institutions in relation to Palestinian liberation? Signed by Angel Lartigue. The Holocaust Museum, Houston, refused to make any modifications to its statement or issue any support for Palestine. So Angel told the museum that she intends to speak about Palestine at the beginning of her talk at the scheduled panel discussion. The museum did not like that and removed her from the panel discussion. In response, 6 Latinx artists that were participating in the Holocaust Museum exhibition, including Angel Lartigue, pulled their work from that exhibition. They then drafted a statement that was signed by dozens of artists from around the globe. We have a link to that statement on our website, arabvoices.net. It is titled Collective Artists in Solidarity with Palestine. In that statement, they demand not just Holocaust institutions, but all cultural art centers to stand in solidarity with Palestine and question the role and accountability of such institutions. Their statement said, quote, "We advocate for the abolition of the settler colonial state of Israel and pose the following questions. How can the Holocaust Museum Houston stand against apartheid and ally to Palestine? What is the role of U.S.-based Holocaust institutions in relation to Palestinian liberation?" Unquote. Following all of that, a magical coalition with Palestinian artists, poets, and activists was born. Houston Artist and Activist Coalition, CASP, Collective Artists in Solidarity with Palestine, collaborated with PYM, Palestinian Youth Movement, and formed In the Sun, exhibition that explores themes of generational struggle, ancestral lineage, and social regeneration through a lens of decolonization and popular resistance. The symposium's theme is inspired by Ghassan Kanafani's novel Men in the Sun and draws from his interpretation of the sun as a national allegory for Palestine. In the Sun exhibition, held at the Station Museum of Contemporary Arts in Houston, explores themes of interconnected struggle, familial and ancestral lineage, reimagining other ways of living outside of oppression, light and darkness, space and resistance. Let's listen in now to some of the discussion that took place at the In the Sun Symposium held on October 9, 2021, at the Station Museum of Contemporary Art in Houston.
So thank you again for coming today for our panel discussion. My name is Mohammed Nabulsi, Muhammad Nabulsi for those who want to hear it in Arabic. I am going to be moderating today's panel. I am with the Palestinian Youth Movement. The Palestinian Youth Movement is a transnational grassroots organization of Palestinian and Arab youth based out of North America, and we organize for liberation, for Palestinian liberation. Here in Houston, we have a chapter. I'm a member of that chapter, along with many of the people here in the audience, and we have a booth back in the corner. PYM, we do a variety of different activities, community events such as this one, mobilizations, protests, direct actions. We've done mutual aid work during Corona. We've done a variety of different activities, and you will get to hear about some of those activities here today as part of this panel discussion. But this isn't just a panel about PYM or Palestine. This is really a panel discussion that's meant to showcase the interconnectedness of our struggles as peoples, different peoples coming from different communities and backgrounds. And it's meant to demonstrate the importance and significance of solidarity to the existence of our communities and to overcoming the struggles that we face as communities. And so we are going to be looking at that topic. This conversation is going to be looking at that topic specifically from the lens of cultural production and its various forms, art, and the role that it plays in movement and struggling against oppression and living through oppression. And so without further ado, I'm going to allow the panelists themselves to introduce themselves. They know themselves better than I know them. Again, Mohammed Nabulsi, he, him pronouns, and I'm going to pass the mic to Lina.
Hi, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for being here. I'm excited to be in this space with my co-panelists and with all of y'all. Lina, she, her pronouns. I'm a community organizer with the Palestinian Youth Movement. I was born and raised in Toronto, Canada, and recently moved to Houston over the last year and a half. And so a lot of my rooting in Houston hasn't been completely developed, and I'm still mapping out the city and the movements and the people that exist here. But I can say that Houston is a really great city, and there's a lot of potential for us as, you know, oppressed peoples to bring our movements together and to build power in the city. Just to talk a little bit about my experience, I started out as a student organizer, and, you know, being Palestinian, there's always this political consciousness. Despite my family not being very political or very cultural, I learned about my Palestinian identity on campus, and I think that's an experience that a lot of Palestinian youth can relate to. And, you know, doing organizing work around the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, passing that at my university. And now I'm doing community work with the Palestinian youth movement, focusing around political education and serving on the Hassan Kanafani Resistance Arts Scholarship, which I'll talk a little bit more about later, but focusing around educational engagement. And I'll pass it to Angel.
Hi, I'm Angel. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a visual artist here in Houston, born and raised here. I was born and raised in the north side of Houston, to Mexican parents. And most of my work, focuses on, the South Texas borderland, which is the U.S.-Mexico border. I've been doing a lot of my work focuses on, using material from that area. I've done some research in forensic anthropology and also been involved with the South Texas Human Rights Center, which is an organization in Falfurrias, Texas, a small town in South Texas that is dedicated to preventing migrant deaths along the border of the U.S.-Mexico land. And one of their main projects is the Water Station Project, which is to build water stations in these lands, mostly on private ranches, and so migrants will not die of dehydration. And a lot of my recent work has been involved with that type of work there. But I could go into a little bit about my work in a bit, but I'll pass it down to Bria.
Hello. I'm really honored to be here and to be sitting here with you guys. This work is amazing, and I'm honored to be here, so I wanted to say that. I'm Bria Lauren. I'm born and raised in Third Ward. I was saying earlier that I'm still getting comfortable with naming myself. But to keep it short, I'm a visual artist. My work is rooted in storytelling and amplifying the voices of Black women in the South and marginalized voices, period. I started about 5 years ago in Third Ward with a very simple mission and just wanting to navigate youth storytelling as an opportunity to heal and to unpack my story as a Black woman growing up in the South. It has been really an honor to be able to connect and use my background in storytelling and wanting to just really have a simple mission and just like healing through visual art and art and activism. So.
Thanks for inviting me to be on this panel with a very amazing panelist. My name is Cris Ben Mariposa Tejada. I use she, they pronouns. I was born and raised in Lenape territory, so-called New York City, and my family is from Quisqueya, Dominican Republic. I consider myself a poet and use poetry as a form of like healing trauma and also talking about history, my family's history. And I also am a land and water defender. I've done a lot of solidarity work with indigenous communities on Turtle Island to defend the land against pipelines. I am also a gardener, and on top of like right, defending the land and like putting your body to like stop these like things that are destroying the land. I also believe in working with the land to like build it and like healing it in that way, and also gardening and working with the land in that way has been a form of art for me and a form of healing my own PTSD and trauma. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Hey y'all, my name's Ryan Crane. I use he and they and Ryan. And I'm also really honored, like it was really great hearing everyone in the back talk about the amazing work they do. So I'm excited to be here and in conversation today. And I am born and raised in Houston, Texas, but I've spent the last decade in New Orleans doing like cultural organizing work, grounded a lot in Black queer feminism. And I like to say that as a performance artist and as an organizer, I'm really interested in Black fugitivity and what it means for Black bodies to move through like borders, fictitious and real, on Turtle Island. And my family is like many roots deep to this region of the Gulf South. So I'm really interested in like archives and oral histories as well. But yeah, I'm really excited to talk about cross struggles against with communities, especially Black and Indigenous communities. So I'm excited to be here today and speaking with folks. So yeah, I'll pass it back.
Thank you everyone for the introductions. Angel, I know you wanted to start out in giving us a little bit of background on this, everything around us. And so can you talk to us really quickly about CASP and this initiative, the exhibition and symposium, so that everyone kind of knows the backdrop?
All right, where to start? So, this exhibition was birthed out of CASP, which stands for Collective Artists in Solidarity with Palestine. There are six artists part of that collective here in this exhibition. Those six artists, including myself, were part of another exhibition here in Houston at the Holocaust Museum called Withstand Latinx Art in Times of Conflict. And it was an exhibition highlighting a lot the Latinx community. And most of the works, it's over 100 works, most of the works are very politically charged, mostly are talking about refuge, exile, immigration, within those themes. And so it was very exciting for the Latinx community here in Houston to participate in the show because there's really no platform for the Latinx community here in Houston, in terms of like an art, cultural arts center. So like everyone, like all the Latinx artists were in that show. And so it spanned over generations from like my generation to like the older, artists that have been making work for years here in Houston. And so it was very exciting for me to show one of my pieces that is part of my forensic anthropology training. And you could see it, it's right over there. It's a burial map. It's right by the vinyl text. That piece was in the show. And I was very, I mean, I don't know a lot about the history of Holocaust institutions here in the U.S. So that, it was a very new thing for me to participate in, and in showing that work in the context of the Holocaust, because that work is tied to my work in the U.S., in the southern Texas, borderlands. And so part of my forensic anthropology training was to identify burial sites of mass graves. And forensic anthropology is a documentation of genocide. That's mostly what forensic anthropologists are dedicated to. And so there's a lot of that activity going on in South Texas because there's a lot of mass graves of unidentified migrant bodies. So over the course of like years, there's been a lot of migrant deaths, and they die on private ranches. And for many years, the authorities don't know what to do with the bodies, so they've put them in unidentified burial sites. And so a lot of the forensic anthropology activity is going down there, exhuming the bodies to identify them. And so that work is tied to that. So it was very interesting to show that work in the context of an institution that frames its cultural center in a sort of documentation of genocide, right? And so the exhibition was going on, and at the same time, it was in the summer of many of the Palestinian riots had been going on, and there was this one Instagram post that the Holocaust Museum made that kind of like I wasn't very fond of. And it was a message from this organization called the ADL, and this organization is historically been like targets Palestinian communities and sort of frames Palestinian activism as anti-Semitic many of the times. And so when this message was released through the Holocaust Museum's Instagram page and I saw the ADL, I was like, what is this? This is like, it was basically framing the Palestinian struggle as this conflict in the Middle East, right? And so it's a very Orientalist view of what is happening. So many people in the post began commenting, like questioning the institution. So does this mean you're in solidarity with Palestine? And there was no answer. Me and a couple of other artists were also commenting on the Instagram page. So this was a very public thing. And there was no word from a reply or anything. So me and another artist, Mo Penders, who's also in this exhibition, we decided to send an email to the Holocaust Museum, asking them to stand in solidarity with Palestine. And there was really no reply for a week. I sent another email, and these emails you could see right by my piece right over there. It was kind of swept down under the rug. And so Mo and I were also part of this program panel in the Holocaust Museum in coinciding with the exhibition, the Withstand exhibition, that was an LGBTQ-themed panel. And so within my email, I asked the museum if I could start the conversation of the role of U.S.-based Holocaust institutions in relation to Palestinian liberation. Because for me, I know people probably wanted me to expected me to talk about gender and sexuality and all that in the panel. But for me, those were the real, like, queer trans questions, you know? And so they took me out of the panel as well. And so I decided to remove my work because as an artist, that's the only power I have within an institution is my own work. And so I removed my work so I could get their attention. And then they removed me from the panel and there was really no response from the museum. So Mo and I decided to start a statement called Collective Artists in Solidarity with Palestine. And we released that statement and we had people sign it as like a collective statement. So we could, because we felt ignored as artists in the exhibition. So many of the works here, well, six artists here are part of the artists from the exhibition that pulled their works out. And then from there, we connected to the Palestinian community here in Houston, and that's how we got connected to PYM. And this is how the show is here. Yeah, it's been a long journey, but I think the whole point is trying to take our narratives as artists back from the way institutions try to sort of appropriate artists' narratives for their own sort of agenda, right? And, you know, it didn't make sense for my work, the burial site, to be in there without the acknowledgement of what's happening in Palestine. And so that's why the work is here. And it's kind of like a statement. And so the exhibition grew beyond that, beyond the six original artists that pulled out of the exhibition. And we wanted to include more local Houston artists and their voices as well to expand solidarity. So it's not just Palestinian artists and the original six people that pulled out, but also other black and brown artists in the Houston community. And so that's how this exhibition was birthed, yeah.
Thank you so much, Angel. And I think for us, you know, as PYM and the Palestinian community more broadly, like, we, you know, as Palestinians, we've become accustomed to the sacrifices and the cost of raising our voices on our, with our struggle. You know, like as we sit here today, like me and Nina, for example, we're on a blacklist website called Canary Mission. Some of the people around you in this room are on that same blacklist website that basically smears us as terrorists, as anti-Semites, as people worthy of suspicion, you know, like people that you should worry about. And that's part of our process. We're denied jobs. There's pressure placed on our universities to be suspended. And so that's something that comes with the territory of advocating for Palestinian rights in this country. And you've seen it, you know, from figures like Angela Davis to Mark Lamont Hill losing awards and jobs because of their choice to stand with Palestine. And so for us, you know, as the Palestinian community, what we try to do, we're not the strongest community. You know, we don't have the greatest numbers. We're mixed in terms of our class status. We don't have robust institutions that we're able to mobilize resources and people to, you know, push back against a lot of the pressure that comes from whether it's AIPAC or the ADL or various other institutions. And so we're on our own, but we do what we can. And so for us as Palestinians, like, this is a moment of us also expressing our solidarity with those who've stood with us. To say, if you are gonna sacrifice, if there's gonna be cost to you, we're gonna try to meet it. And this is this moment for us, is to say, you know, thank you, you know, we're really grateful. And we, as different oppressed peoples, we're actually a continuation of legacies of internationalism, of solidarity. Like, the previous generations have carried this work, and they've paid with lives, you know? They've fought with rifles for each other's struggles. And, this is, especially, you know, if you talk about sort of the intersections between imperialism and Zionism and its role in Central and South America or in wherever it is, in Southern Africa or in East Asia or in the Middle East, we've exchanged soldiers. We've exchanged fighters. We've taught each other how to resist. And we've not only taught each other how to resist through guns, we've taught each other how to resist through words, through art, through cultural exchange. And this is meant to capture that. This panel is really about that, about interconnectedness of struggle, about how cultural production, art, writing, poetry really uplifts our people and keeps them resilient in the face of an overwhelming force, and that is our oppressors. And so that's what we're here to talk about today.
You're listening to Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Let's continue now listening to more of the discussion held at the In the Sun Art Symposium, held at the Station Museum of Contemporary Art in Houston.
And so with that, I want to turn to you all. I want to talk to you all about the role of cultural production in resistance. But specifically, I want to start with a conversation about you as artists, you individually as artists, organizers, activists. How did you begin to have interests in the work that you do? And how were you introduced to this type of work? How is it linked to your communities?
I'm unfortunately not an artist, but I'll speak to sort of my gateway into community organizing and what that has meant for me in terms of the development of my identity as a Palestinian woman. You know, growing up, again, like I mentioned, I didn't really grow up in a very political household, nor were we very culturally Palestinian. I just knew that I was Arab. And I remember being super young during the Second Intifada, which is the Palestinian uprising, you know, having visuals on our TV of Mohammed al-Durra, who was a Palestinian child that was killed by an Israeli Defense Force soldier during the Intifada. And I remember still today seeing that, and it was my first political memory as a Palestinian, and I was like, oh, well, what's going on here? I was probably like 5 years old. I didn't really understand, but you know, with the music, I'm not sure if anybody would recognize it, but Hilm al Arabi, where a bunch of, you know, Arab singers are singing to the Palestinian condition. And I remember that really sticking with me. Though I seem, you know, as I grow up, I seem to forget about it. But it wasn't until, you know, I get to university on my campus where I start to become politicized. And for me, the first sort of way that I became, that I studied the Palestinian struggle and started to learn from it, wasn't necessarily through asking my parents. It was through studying history. And I feel like history for me tells us a lot about our past, but it also speaks to our contemporary condition and where we can be in the future, what's possible for us as Palestinians and all oppressed peoples, of course. So that's one way that, you know, I started to come into Palestinian organizing, is through studying my struggle. And through studying my struggle, I realized there's this rich history around culture, around cultural production, that for the Palestinian struggle, it's not, of course, it's the political struggle that has kept us alive and present here, but it's also the culture that has also kept us alive and kept our stories alive. And I think one thing that's really central to the Palestinian cause, like many other movements, is this intergenerational storytelling. And that has inspired a lot of the work that I do, but I'll talk a little bit about it. But that is to say, like, I started, you know, at my university library, I'd go look for Palestinian literature. The first thing I found was this modern anthology of Palestinian poetry, and reading through it. And the themes that come out is the loss of land, the love for our land, the love for our people, and reading it through a very simple way. I'm not studying history or looking at journal articles that might be inaccessible, but for me, Palestinian literature and art was very accessible, and I can see very clearly what my struggle means and what principles my struggle carries. And so I'm very grateful for art, and I have a deep, deep appreciation for it because it's taught me a lot about my identity as a Palestinian. So that's the first thing I wanted to know. And so in terms of the work that I do in the Palestinian youth movement, I chair the Popular University Committee, which is the political education committee for the organization. And so developing curriculum about Palestinian history and Palestinian struggle, and, you know, investigating the ways that we as Palestinian youth in North America are able to, what is our role in struggle? What's our role given our positionality in the U.S. and Canada? And so some of the projects that we've done that I've led personally is documenting oral history of our elders, specifically elders that are involved, that have been involved in struggle. So interviewing, you know, what are some of the lessons that you take away during your time of organizing? What advice do you have for Palestinian youth carrying forward the struggle today? And documenting these narratives because, you know, historically in the history of our struggle, our archives, our cultural centers have been sites of targeted violence purposefully, and I'll talk about this later, but these
cultural life and the documentation of our history is a site of resistance, and we as Palestinians obviously need to protect that. So that's some of the work that I do with the PYM. I'm also on the Ghassan Kanafani Resistance Art Scholarship Committee. I spoke about it yesterday, but it's a scholarship for Palestinian youth in North America to submit their artwork. I was responsible specifically for educational engagement around the scholarship. So how does the print anthology live beyond just the book? How can people like us engage with the content that is in the anthologies? So drawing on themes of like, what does Palestinian identity mean? How do we form Palestinian identity in exile? Investigating themes around that and generating discussion about that. My friend and I, she's actually included in the exhibit. Her work is in the far corner over here. Her name is Dania Zaytouni. She's also an Arab community organizer based out of Detroit and previously in Chicago. But we've developed coloring pages for children and youth to have at our community events. But we designed them together, drawing out visuals and symbols from the work of Ghassan Kanafani in his short stories, like for example, The Sun, from his novel Men in the Sun, which represents the severity of, the hard conditions marked by, you know, colonialism and how difficult it is for us to resist, of Saad, who is a peasant woman, and teaching about the significance that women have played in terms of cultural and social reproduction for our struggle. And also, you know, the symbol of the orange as a symbol for loss of land. So teaching youth and children about Palestinian history through art and artistic expression is something that's very important to me, and I carry through my work as an organizer.
My next question, and Lina, you sort of talked about this a little bit, but cultural production as a force of preservation, as survival, that's part of it. So talk to me about what is the role of cultural production, of art, of poetry, of writing for your community? What does it do? What is its role? What can it do? What should it do? Things like that. I just want to see whether you explore that through your own work. And I also want to say, y'all all do work, plug your work, let us know where we can find you, things like that. Also, plug that in the conversation.
Yeah, cultural cultivation, I think, is very important because it reminds us, like, what we're fighting for. And whenever I think about Palestinian liberation and me growing up, you know, in the North Side, Sam Houston High School, I think about, you know, queer and trans Palestinians as well, you know, and how me being in the panel at the Holocaust Museum and a LGBTQ-themed panel, it was important to me to address what it means for this panel to be in solidarity with Palestine. And it's one thing where I think, Bria, you talked a little bit about owning the narratives of your work. I think the power of an artist is owning the narratives because many institutions co-opt your narratives. And this happens in, you know, this happens in Palestine. This happens, you know, there's the pink washing, right? There's the sort of like co-opting or appropriation of an LGBTQ and making, or nation states in general use that as a way to see themselves as progressive. And for me, a queer and trans liberation is also a Palestinian liberation. And I'm constantly thinking about trans Palestinians, you know, and how could I connect, you know? And I think this was an opportunity for me to sort of expand that bridge, that interconnected struggle. And that is what culture cultivation for me looks like. You know, it starts in, It starts in your neighborhood and where you're at and your experiences. There's someone else in the world experiencing something similar. We're not so disconnected in reality, because these are the same systems that are subjugating us. For me, I think about, you know, it was just like a couple of days ago, a woman got shot right in front of my street, right in front of my house, in the early hours of the morning. And I'm constantly thinking about the violence as well, you know, like, how is that connected? There's someone else in the world also experiencing this from the same system, the same military occupation, right? I think about queer and trans people being murdered all the time, specifically black trans women and brown trans women. And, you know, that's, again, I think about there's another person in Palestine also experiencing that, you know, in a similar way. And so culture cultivation means that is how can I, you know, remind my community what I'm experiencing, and also how it reminds us, like, how important it is, and this is what culture cultivation looks like. It's the coming together of community and feeling, you know, feeling, great and feeling happy that we're here together, and it reminds us what we're fighting for, I think. Yeah, very important.
I feel like, yeah, culture preservation as a form of resistance. When I think about that, I think about how art literally has been used in every single resistance movement across the board, because it, right? It's a form of being able to express yourself in a way that maybe, you know, going in a protest is not enough, you know? It's trying to hit the hearts of, like, people in a different way. It's also, right, healing your trauma. It's like writing an underground newsletter with poetry, because otherwise, you know, like, that scares the government, you know, like, it scares them that you are writing a newsletter with poetry talking about resistance. Like, that, there's so many movements where the government doesn't want that, because it's like moving people, it's creating, it's like a shift and creating a cultural shifts in people. And I guess that's what I think about when I think about art and resistance and art and movements. And I'm a direct action trainer. So if people don't know what that means, it's like training people to, like, how to resist certain, forces. So how to do strategic things in order to, like, take action against certain forces that are oppressing us. And art is always in those movements. Art is always in the action. Because if I'm looking at a picture of a protest and there's an art piece, I can, like, think, it, like, makes me think about the process in a different way. It makes me, yeah, it just, like, brings another life into resistance. So that's what I have to say.
So I feel like I may backtrack and kind of almost answer the first question as well. Yeah, it's like my first time talking to non-Zoom people in a very long time. So it's been a lot. I'm like, whoa, people in person. But I feel like just to kind of even backtrack to, like, how I got into this work kind of involves, like, an understanding of the prison industrial complex. And for folks who are not familiar with that, it's just literally the systems we're operating under, whether it's, like, prisons, ICE detention centers, border patrol, police, like Muhammad mentioned earlier. And I think, can't even remember what year it was, but one of my first kind of times, like, seeing how anti-black the police state was going to an Alton Sterling action in Baton Rouge, the big one that ended up in the court case, because they literally cornered us and the police were, like, pummeling us. And I was traumatized. Like, even summer before last, it was really hard to go to actions because I had so much, like, PTSD from that experience. But it was my first time seeing militarized police show up in SWAT gear, laughing as we chanted Black Lives Matter. And it was with that understanding that I connected to the understanding of Palestine and learning that those same military forces that I saw there were being cross-trained by the Israeli military force to come and oppress my people here at home. And it made that Theral line so clear to me. And it's so important for me to continue to understand international anti-imperialist struggles. But I guess that's not even the only thing I kind of wanted to mention was I wanted to go into like kind of my understanding of like cultural production and its role and like movement and art as resistance, as Mariposa mentioned. Like for me, it really was kind of rooted in rhythm and blues and like me really being into hardcore music when I was like a 15-year-old and being like, where the heck are the black and brown people? Like, I'm like, I know this isn't white music, but where are they? And so I kind of went into this, what felt like, kind of spiral looking and finding bands like Bad Brains and like all these different groups that had like black folks in it. And for me, I feel like music has been, even though it's not my practice per se, music has been a way I've entered cultural organizing. Like, I think maybe in 2015, I helped organize a black and brown punk show called Deep Cuts in New Orleans. And we convened like all these different bands, from around like the U.S., Turtle Island. And we brought them to New Orleans and like, we had them all play, and it was like this moment where I was just like, music is like this kind of connector for me, this diasporic connector, like where you can find like everything from like just music as this connector for me, this liberatory force that allows me to convene and like speak to my people even without like words, just like sound. And another thing that kind of came from that as well is like my exploration of like blues in the South and learning, I've been trying to teach myself the banjo and learning that, the banjo exists because they took drums from black people. Because during most of the uprisings and revolts that happened, people used drums as like a leading line in a way to like signal to each other. So the banjo exists as an instrument out of that resistance because we wanted to keep playing our drums. So we took strings and put them across this thing that looked like a tom drum. So just for me, the connection has been like music. And I think in all BIPOC cultures are like musical, like even seeing the footwork that Palestinians do and then indigenous people do and black people do, just seeing that as a form of resistance and also this connector that is like about our liberation because we still dance and move and sing. And that is scary to the oppressor when they see us having that joy or even moving in that way or even connecting in that way. So yeah, I think that would be my response.
I'll be very brief. I think when we, you know, look back in history and look at colonial and imperial powers, we, you know, we obviously understand those systems to operate as like an extraction of wealth, of stealing resources and wealth from nations. But what's also central to imperialism and colonialism is this organized repression of cultural life. And we see it, you know, and here on the context of Turtle Island in terms of this theory of assimilation of indigenous nations or any colonized peoples, their culture becomes, you know, targeted and under direct attack from whatever colonial or imperial power. And I think, you know, my co-panelist spoke to this, but the ways in which music and art and poetry is able to mobilize the masses because of its accessibility in terms of messaging, in terms of, you know, playing on instruments. And so, in order, I think it's incredibly important to preserve those traditions in terms of artistic expression. And this is something that's been also very central to the Palestinian context where, you know, symbols of resistance, even the Palestinian flag, is criminalized, where, you know, you can't be waving a Palestinian flag, you know, because you could be shot at or go to prison for, so, or even throwing a stone. Any form of resistance, is targeted. And again, in the Palestinian context,
art has been used as a way to be able to articulate Palestinian national identity through exploring some of these themes. And I think that's what the PYM's Ghassan Kanafani Resistance Art Scholarship seeks to do. You know, I don't want to get into the history of the Palestinian struggle, but there's a moment in 1993 that, you know, we refer to as the Oslo Accords, which formally meant the end of a national liberation movement and the progression towards a statehood. And, you know, that moment has been very, that moment has a lot of negative consequences that we as Palestinians experience today. And one of the ways that we experience this is the loss of national institutions. You know, historically, like, the Palestinian Liberation Organization has formally organized international art exhibits across the world to bring awareness to the Palestinian cause, because, again, art is accessible to everybody. And so us as the PYM, to be able to establish this scholarship as a way to provide space for Palestinian youth, where there really isn't much space for Palestinian artists to have a platform to submit their art. There aren't really spaces for Palestinians to collectively be in conversation with one another in terms of, you know, around themes like Palestinian identity formation, what it's like to grow up in exile and be demonized living in the West just for being Palestinian. And so the scholarship really, you know, seeks to provide this space for Palestinians to explore our identity, explore their relationship to Palestine, even despite the geographic fragmentation. And so, yeah, I think cultural preservation for the Palestinian context is incredibly important.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, again. I think like cultural production, and we have to broaden it. And I'm glad that you brought up music, Ryan. I think music is such a significant part of every struggle. And I think if you think about it, like, oppression is a form of ongoing genocide, and genocide isn't just the taking of life. It's also the taking of life, and not just like life, death, but also what it means to live and thrive. And culture is such a significant aspect of thriving as people. And you can repress people so much more if they don't have that spiritual food that is culture. Like, that gives you life and keeps you going. Even when your conditions are terrible, listening to a song that hits just right, that makes you feel the way that you need to feel in that moment, that's so special. And to do that and then couple it with resistance, to say, not only should I live, but I should thrive, and I should resist those who don't want me to thrive, and to go do that through culture, then culture becomes the target. Right? And that's why Ghassan Kanafani, the namesake of our scholarship, Ghassan Kanafani was assassinated by the State of Israel. Him and his niece in 1971. He was killed in a car bomb. And in Lebanon. And other Palestinian cultural figures have either entered prisons or been assassinated. From Naji Al-Ali to even more recently, in the last couple years, a poet by the name of Darin Tartur, she wrote a poem that was titled "Resist My People, Resist Them." And because she wrote this poem and broadcast this poem, she was imprisoned for incitement. And so our enemies see this, the work that we do, as a threat, because it is a threat, and it needs to be a threat. And it is something that, you know, for our people, whether it's through dance, whether it's through music, whether it's through art, it gives them resilience. And resilience is such an important aspect to resistance, of keeping going, of, you know, in Palestinians, among the concept of samud, is resilience, steadfastness, is central to what we believe is necessary for resistance. And obviously that's common across so many different struggles. So,
you're listening to Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. What you just heard were portions of the discussion held at the In the Sun Art Symposium held at the Station Museum of Contemporary Art in Houston on October 9th, 2021. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth. Yeah.